Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to IndiGo's conference call to discuss the second quarter fiscal year 2019 financial results. My name is Aman, and I'll be your coordinator. At this time, the participants are in a listen-only mode. A question and answer session will follow today's management discussion. As a reminder, today's conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to your moderator, Mr. Ankur Goyal, Associate Vice President of Treasury and Investor Relations for IndiGo. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the second quarter fiscal year 2019 earnings call. We have with us our co-founder and interim CEO, Rahul Bhatia, and our Chief Financial Officer, Rohit Philip, to take you through our performance for the quarter. Greg Taylor, our Senior Advisor, Wolfgang Prockschauer, our Chief Operating Officer, and Willy Bolter, our Chief Commercial Officer, are also with us and available for the question and answer session. Before we begin, please note that today's discussion may contain certain statements on our business or financials which may be construed as forward-looking. Our actual results may be materially different from these forward-looking statements. The information provided on this call is as of today's date, and we undertake no obligation to update the information subsequently. A transcript of today's call will also be archived on our website. We will upload the transcript of today's prepared remarks within an hour. The transcript of the question and answer session will be uploaded subsequently. With this, let me hand over the call to Rahul Bhatia.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us on this call. We announced our second quarter fiscal 2019 financial results today. The second quarter is seasonally the weakest quarter of the year. In addition, as you are aware, there has been a surge in the fuel prices and a significant depreciation in the Indian rupee during the quarter. Fuel constitutes over 40% of our total costs, and about 50% of our costs, excluding fuel, are denominated in foreign currency. Typically, in the airline industry, you would expect to see higher fares to cover the increased costs. However, that has not happened here. This has significantly impacted our profitability, and we reported a net loss of Indian rupees 6.5 billion for the quarter. Rohit will talk more about this when he takes you through our financial performance in detail. Despite these pressures on the industry, we continue to execute our long-term growth plan focused on building a leading nationwide air transportation network. India remains a significantly underpenetrated market, with all the Indian carriers combined having about 600 commercial planes flying between themselves. In comparison, some of the largest carriers in the US, Europe, and China would alone have more planes than this. There continues to be strong growth in the demand for air travel in India, and we are scaling up to offer more choices to customers and satisfy this demand. Along our journey to build this robust network, we added 20 aircraft to our fleet and ended the quarter with a fleet of 189 aircraft. This enabled us to add 5 new destinations and 35 new routes, including 3 routes under the Udaan scheme. We have also selectively increased frequencies across our existing network and now offer connectivity to over 1,300 city pairs via non-stop and one-stop flights. We have crossed the milestone of operating over 100 daily departures out of each metro city, Delhi, Bombay, Bengaluru, Kolkata, Hyderabad, and Chennai. We have begun selling tickets for 7 new destinations, including 6 international cities: Allahabad, Abu Dhabi, Hong Kong, Kuala Lumpur, Kuwait, Male, and Phuket. In addition, we expect to start receiving Airbus A321neos from November this year, which will bring some more international points within range. Besides growing rapidly, we continue to perform well operationally. We had an average OTP of 86.8% for the quarter and were awarded the best airline on-time performance at the 3rd edition of Iconic Awards. Our technical dispatch reliability was 99.87% for the quarter. I am also happy to report that our company was awarded the best domestic budget airline at the Z Business Travel Awards 2018. None of this would have been possible without the efforts of our 20,000 IndiGo team members who work relentlessly with the single-minded focus of making us a world-class airline. Another testimony is the recent award for Companies with Great Managers at the Great Managers Award 2018, presented to us by People Business. Finally, let me say that all of us at Indigo were deeply saddened by the extensive flooding in Kerala, and I was heartened by the rapid response of the airline. Before services to Kochi Airport were restored, we operated a total of 92 additional flights out of Kozhikode and Thiruvananthapuram, and 24 flights from the Kochi Naval Base to facilitate the increased travel needs into and out of Kerala. We provided special assistance to our passengers through free of charge cost cancellations and rerouting for affected customers, and aided rescue operations by transporting over 50 tons of relief supplies from our various collection centers across India. Once again, Indigo provided practical and immediate help during the testing times for our country. With this, let me hand over the call to Rohit for a detailed overview of our financials.
Thank you, Rahul, and good evening, everyone. For the quarter ended September 2018, we reported a net loss of 6.5 billion rupees compared to a profit after tax of 5.5 billion rupees during the same period last year. We reported an EBITDAR of 2.2 billion rupees with an EBITDAR margin of 3.6% compared to an EBITDAR of 16 billion rupees with an EBITDAR margin of 29.9% during the same period last year. As Rahul mentioned, our profitability was significantly impacted by cost pressures from the increase in fuel prices and the depreciation of the Indian rupee, as well as from the competitive fare environment. The average aviation fuel price in India during the quarter was 40% higher than the same period last year. Fuel is about 40% of our costs. After adjusting for the increased volumes, this increase in fuel price resulted in higher fuel costs of 9.1 billion rupees compared to the same period last year. The Indian rupee also depreciated significantly during the quarter and closed at 72.58 rupees per US dollar. Based on this, we booked a foreign exchange loss of 3.4 billion rupees compared to a loss of 0.5 billion rupees during the same period last year. The currency depreciation also had an adverse year-over-year impact of 1.4 billion rupees on our dollar-denominated expenses. So the overall impact of currency depreciation increased our costs by 4.3 billion rupees compared to the same period last year. Unfortunately, these higher input costs have not been recovered as fares remain low due to continued intense competition. Similar to the last quarter, the 0 to 15-day booking window remains weak with lower fares compared to the same period last year. This has been further accentuated by the significant increase in capacity in the market. We are getting significantly more aircraft as Airbus has ramped up its neo deliveries to make up for the delays earlier. In this growth phase, when new capacity is being added, the RASK is generally lower as it takes time for new markets to mature. The year-over-year impact of lower RASK on our profits is 5.6 billion rupees. The total capacity for the September quarter was 19.5 billion ASKs, an increase of 28.9% compared to the same period last year. Our revenue from operations in the September quarter was 61.9 billion rupees, an increase of 16.9% over the same period last year. Our other income was 3.3 billion rupees for the quarter. Our RASK for the quarter was 3.23 rupees compared to 3.52 rupees during the same quarter last year, a decline of 8.1%. This decline in RASK was primarily driven by a decrease in yields. Our yields were down by 9.7% to 3.21 rupees, while our load factors were nearly flat at 84.5%. The year-over-year fuel price of increase of 40% led to an overall CASK increase of 24.1%. Our CASK for the quarter was 3.74 rupees compared to 3.01 rupees during the same period last year. CASK excluding fuel was 2.18 rupees in the current quarter, an increase of 13.5% from the same period last year, primarily because of the adverse effect of foreign exchange. The foreign exchange loss combined with the impact of currency depreciation on our dollar-denominated expenses resulted in an 11.2% increase in our CASK excluding fuel. Excluding the impact of foreign exchange, our CASK excluding fuel went up by only 2.3% despite inflationary pressures. We have taken several steps to create efficiencies and improve productivity as we scale up. For example, we have adopted various initiatives to reduce the fuel burn on our planes by reducing weight and improving navigation and landing procedures. we have also improved the productivity of airport operations through better cross-utilization of resources. We have refined our maintenance schedule to improve aircraft utilization by carrying out activities during the night. Our balance sheet continues to remain strong. Our cash balance at the end of the period was 132 billion rupees, comprised of 44 billion rupees of free cash and 87 billion rupees of restricted cash. We purchased 3 ATRs using our free cash during the quarter. We had total debt of 26 billion rupees at the end of the quarter. Before I close my remarks, let me give you our capacity guidance for the coming quarter. We expect a year-over-year capacity increase in terms of ASKs of 35% for the third quarter. For the full year, we expect a capacity increase of 30%. This is higher than our previous guidance because, as I mentioned earlier, we have now started seeing a ramp-up in new deliveries post the initial delays. With this, let me hand it back to Ankur.
Thank you, Rahul and Rohit. To answer as many questions as possible, I would like to request that each participant limit themselves to one question and one brief follow-up if required. And with that, we are ready for the Q&A.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Ronald Dalal from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Dalal, your line is unmuted for questions. You may please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. So my question is about the regional connectivity scheme. So I was wondering that, so first and foremost, how much percentage of your overall ASK would be deployed currently and maybe in this year be deployed in the RCS scheme?
So this is Greg Taylor. I'll take that question. I don't have an exact percentage for you, but it's very small at the moment. I mean, we are participating in the scheme, but it's only a handful of routes with ATRs. We have other bids, and we'll be adding more flying in RCS markets as we go forward. But as of right now, it's not material.
It's not material. Okay, because I was just checking out the load factors are significantly lower for IndiGo versus some of the competitors on the same routes. Okay, my second question was that in the long and medium haul operations, any like advancement in the plans for going into international markets besides is there any cutback from what there was the earlier plan?
So this is Greg Taylor again. Sort of long-haul flying with wide-body airplanes at this point has kind of remains more of an aspiration than a plan. But in the interim, we continue to add a lot of international markets that are within range of A320 family airplanes. And later this year in November, we'll be getting deliveries of A321s that have additional range, and that's going to open up some other markets for international flying. So we continue to, our plan is to take advantage of international opportunities within the capabilities of our existing fleet in the near term.
Right. And last question is that, hello?
Yes. Hello?
Yeah. So my last question is that, so you had also mentioned on the call that the capacity additions are high for the industry, but mostly the capacity additions are high because they're driven by IndiGo right now. So from April to October, you all have added around 33 planes, whereas the other participants have not really added so many planes. So mostly the capacity addition is high because you all have the highest market share and you all are adding planes at a very high pace. So is that the reason why the fares are low rather than just competition?
Let me take the capacity addition question and then Greg can sort of comment on the fares. The capacity addition, what we said was that because of the delays in the new deliveries that we were scheduled to get earlier, they started ramping up, and so we got sort of a bunch of deliveries, more bunched up than the sort of the original schedule. And so, yes, we did get a number of deliveries this quarter. But, Greg, you want to take the question on?
Well, the only thing I would add to the capacity answers question is if you look back over previous quarters, I think what you tend to find is that industry capacity, domestic industry capacity, grows around this kind of 19, 18, 20% range. In some periods of time, back when the NEOs weren't being delivered, Indigo was making up a smaller percentage. Now we're making up a larger percentage, but the industry overall continues to grow at this 20% range, which is kind of in line with demand. So you're right. This quarter we grew faster, but the competitors grew slower. If you look back a couple more quarters, it was somewhat reversed. So, that's the situation right now. With regard to the fares, I'll turn that over to Willie if you'd like to take that one away.
Sure. It's Willie Bolter here. We are, as we've mentioned, in a period of intense competitive pressure. And I want to characterize that by really looking at the booking periods. If you look at the booking period outside 15 days, what we've seen is that whereas previously 60% of our traffic was booked in that period, now that's reduced to around 54%. And the reverse is obviously applied to the booking period within 15 days, where it's increased from 40% previously in the previous year to 46% now. And what we've seen is that the competitive pressure is very intense in that period, and we've seen the yields decline closer to departure. Whereas if you actually look at the yields beyond 15 days, so bookings outside that 15-day period, the yield has actually gone up. So I think with that in mind, that explains, why the fares, we have to match what we see happening in the market. Obviously, we are keen to, protect our market share. And as a result, we have to match the activity of the other carriers.
Okay, sure. I'll get back in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Binay Singh from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Thanks for the opportunity. Just on the capacity, just to understand it better, so is it that Indigo would have gone to Airbus and said that, we want to bring in more planes, or Airbus sort of told Indigo that you have to take more planes? Because earlier we were looking at 25% growth in ASK, and now we've raised that in 30% when industry profitability is fairly weak. So just to understand the dynamics of that relationship.
So this is Greg Taylor again. I don't really want to comment on the details of our contract with Airbus, but I want to sort of get back to what we've said in past calls, and we continue to be primarily focused on a long-term network strategy. I mean, as Raul said in his prepared comments, we are building a nationwide air transportation network for the country, and our focus continues to be putting those pieces in place. The reason that we've sort of grown to more than 100 departures a day at each of the six metros, that's the foundation of that kind of network. And so, even though we have a somewhat of a bubble in our capacity during these two quarters, we still are comfortable with our long-term capacity plans, and we think we're on the right strategy to create value not only for shareholders but also for our customers. So we're happy generally with our capacity strategy, although admittedly we have a small bubble here in the next couple of quarters.
And just linked to that, so basically, is it fair to assume that the bulk of increase in capacity is A320neos, and will they be operating lease, finance lease? And lastly, how are the premiums, the sale and lease back premiums now on the neos? That'll be helpful if you could comment on these three.
Sure, Binay. So firstly, the bulk of the capacity is A320neos. They will likely be mainly on sale and leaseback like we've been doing previously. In terms of the market is still pretty robust in terms of lessor demand for sale and lease backs.
Great, great. Thanks a lot. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Lakhan from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening. Quickly on the change in the strategy regarding the purchase of aircrafts, I think we've shifted that. Last year we had plans of like purchasing aircrafts, and now we're thinking about doing sale and lease back. Just wanted to understand the thought process there, and also like if you could give if you can share some light on in terms of what are the cash incentives in terms of trend, like how they have been considering that the fuel cost has now gone up with the market prices of NEO, or for that matter even the lease rentals for NEOs inching up. How do cash incentives as a trend look versus last year and then going ahead?
Okay, so let me take them one at a time. I mean, I think if you there hasn't really been any change in our strategy. So what we had been talking about over the last year is that we want to start owning some planes with free cash flow going forward, and we've already started to do that with the ATRs. We do intend to buy A320s at some point with cash as well. But as we said even at the time all along, that based on the free cash we generate, we'll still only take a very small percentage of our additional aircraft deliveries through that route, and the majority of our aircraft would continue to rely on the sale leaseback model to finance the majority of our planes. So when you come to today, that overall strategy is still pretty much the path we're on. Obviously, at times, and what I said on the last call as well, at times when there's a little uncertainty, you want to be prudent with cash. So right now we're holding off buying any A320s with cash and continuing to rely on the sale and leaseback model. And we'll review that periodically when we think it's the right time to start buying. Now the question on the value of A320s in the market, I think you all will see that the values are pretty strong, and so that has continued to hold up well, and I think that's pretty much what I said on the last question as well.
All right, yeah, thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Achal Kumar from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. First of all, I wanted to understand about your strategic plans, strategic initiatives. Of course, I mean, when you brought such an experienced team at the management level, you must have some strategic steps in mind. So if you could please remind us at the moment, what are your key three strategies probably? Another thing I wanted to understand, and taking the question on the capacity versus fares forward, I mean, obviously you're growing at 35% in Q3 and 30, probably similar amount in Q4. And then you have the similar growth plans for the next year. And if the growth plans are such, of course, you want to maintain your load factor, and that means you need to offer lower fares. I could see the news, though it's typically a seasonal news or offer, you're offering 10 lakh seats at a very discounted price. I mean, so how do you think you could counter the rising fuel price, softening INR with such a low fares? Obviously, it fits to your plan and then to grab market share, but overall, you're losing the shareholder equity value. I mean, so how do you think, how do we see the fares going forward, given that you are growing at such a high level? And lastly, I wanted to understand, recently I understand that the passenger fee at Bangalore Airport was reduced significantly, and that will definitely feed into your yields. And on the other side, the tax was cut by the government on the fuel, though it was very minor. So in all, together, these two putting together, how do you see what sort of benefit you're looking at in terms of per passenger maybe? Thank you.
So that was a lot of questions. Maybe I'll take part of it and let others step in. You know, with regard to the strategy moving forward, you know, a lot of it I talked about in my previous comments. I mean, from a customer point of view, our strategy is pretty much unchanged. We continue to be focused on a very, you know, simple model of providing low fares, hassle-free service, and on-time service, and that we think that strategy is resilient and will remain in place. We also have a very strong strategy around our employees and how we want to continue to have Indigo be a great place to work. You know, beyond that, I've talked already about some of the network strategy, and our long-term plan is to build a world-class network for the country, and the pieces of that are being put in place quite rapidly. When I look at more than 100 flights a day in all six metros, you know, already, even though we're not a true hub-and-spoke carrier who, you know, building banks of connections, we just naturally are creating connections. We now are offering nonstop or one-stop service in over 1,300 city pairs. So the long-term strategy of building this network for the country is really our focus right now. So I think that's my answer to the, you know, sort of top three strategy questions. You know, the questions more generally about long-term fares. You know, we look at our capacity plan, you know, going out into the next fiscal year, and we're comfortable with it right now, but we have flexibility. I mean, our capacity plan is made up of new deliveries plus retirement of older CEO airplanes. And so if we were to decide we wanted more or less, we have the ability to adjust that in the future if we need to. I mean, right now, we're comfortable where we are, but we frequently look at it, and if we need to make an adjustment, we will. I don't know, there was a bunch of fare questions there kind of around that. Did you catch that? Anybody want to help me with that one?
Well, perhaps I can just comment on the sale that you mentioned, you noticed today. Just to say that, you know, we have sales from time to time. Where we see periods of weaker demand, and this sale we announced today is actually effective for travel after Diwali. And in the period where, you know, obviously traffic falls off after the holidays. And we are very cautious and very prudent about, you know, the number of seats looks good from a headline point of view. It is 10 lakh seats, and that gives you some idea of the scale of the airline now. But it doesn't cover, you know, all the seats on the whole network. And nor is the lead-in price necessarily the price that applies for the vast majority of the sectors. So, you know, just to explain some of the rationale behind that. And we are always looking at our prices in a very rational fashion. Indeed, we did try a couple of months ago to put in a fuel surcharge, which demonstrates that we are, we think, behaving properly and understandably given the higher costs that we face.
Okay. And the last question was about the passenger fee at Bangalore Airport, I think, where you have deployed almost 10% of your capacity. So that's quite important for you. So passenger fees was reduced and the taxes on the ATF was reduced slightly. So how do you see that? I mean, what sort of impact do you see?
Yes, so obviously those are positive steps. They're small steps, but directionally positive.
If I just may comment on this from operational point of view, Wolfgang here. If you see globally, airline successful low cost carriers are, let's say, besides in the 200 aircraft range. You can see this in America. You can see it in Europe. So this is one element also our growth strategy to continue and improve our sustainability in terms of productivity, and this goes for all areas. Because we can see now we are able to upgrade majority of our new pilots within our system. We can implement, we can achieve much better productivity. This applies to flight attendants in the same way. Engineering, we're getting the user infrastructure much better and are able also to upgrade it. And especially also in flight operations, in airport services, you have a lot of elements with, let's say, if you fly more, there's much more benefit in terms of achieving higher productivity in running the operations. And that's one of our main goals, to become even more efficient airline in the future. And that's also important when you go more internationally, you deal with big carriers, and we must be better and will be better than them. So this is also one added element in our strategy.
Yeah, agree on that part. But obviously the demand is immature in India at the moment, and if you're growing at 30%, you need to, either you offer low fares to keep your low factor, or you let your low factor kill, right? So you know, it's sort of negotiation between the two.
Yeah, so I think the perspective we shared here is, you know, there's the long term strategy that we are very comfortable with. There will be some periods where there's where capacity comes in a little quick and it takes time for demand and supply to rebalance. But overall, I think as Greg said, we're very comfortable with the plan that we have.
Look, I mean, capacity or demand is growing really fast. The economy is healthy in India, and we continue to see demand growing in the 20% range. So, you know, things may be out of balance a little bit in the short term, but with that pace of demand growth, we're comfortable that it's going to get back in balance fairly soon.
Sorry, this is Rahul. Greg, if I may add, you must understand that, you know, at IndiGo, we are not leading the charge in terms of low fares. We have never had that policy. What you're seeing today in the marketplace, and we all read the newspapers, there are players in the industry who are really hurting, and for them to raise short-term cash, they have to lower fares, and we as a company have no choice but to match them. That's the one part. The other part is when we talk about the industry growing at 20%, within that, IndiGo may be growing a little bit faster than 20%, but if you look at the overall industry, it actually is almost at par with the growth in traffic. So we don't believe that there's too much capacity coming into the market. It's in line with the growth of the industry. But the other issue is the fares, which really is not being led by us because of the 30%, you know, guidance we provide on capacity growth going into the future.
Thank you, Mr. Kumar. May we request you to join the question queue for any follow-ups, as we have several participants waiting for their turn. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sonal Gupta from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening. Thanks for taking my questions. So I just wanted to ask a question in terms of of course, the fares are low right now, and they will inflect when they inflect. But in terms of any thoughts around the price elasticity of demand, so, I mean, just my broad sense is that if you have to get back to your profitability over the last couple of years, then you probably need a 15 to 20% increase in yields. And if you have a 10 to 15% increase in yields, for the industry, do you think that 20% growth that we're seeing still on the passenger side, how much can this slow down? So any thoughts around that?
Well, it's Willie Bolt here. I would only say that in airline history, generally, markets have grown at double the rate of GDP growth. And where we have in India a GDP growth of 8%, that would imply a sort of aviation market growth of around 16. And that really applies whatever the pricing is. I mean, obviously, we couldn't jack up the yields by 50%, but I think even if they went up by 15 or 20%, you would still see a very healthy growth given the GDP growth in the country.
This is Greg Taylor. I'd add one point to it, if I may, Will, is that, you know, we talked about what's happening inside 15 days and outside 15 days. You know, I think if you look at the literature, there's a lot of work that's been done on this over the years about elasticity of demand in the airline industry. And And typically, business travel, and which is usually booked inside 15 days, is very inelastic. Essentially, it doesn't respond very much to fare increases, and leisure travel is quite elastic, which is why when you do a fare sale that's targeted at leisure traffic, that is revenue generative because it's quite elastic demand. If you cut fares for business travelers, it doesn't generate very much demand. It just generates less revenue, and I think that's kind of what we're seeing playing out. We mentioned earlier that outside 15 days, our yields are actually up a little bit. The real problem are discounts to inelastic travelers.
Right, right. Thanks. And just one more question on, I think Rohit, last call you mentioned that on the sort of the supplementary rental reserves the restricted cash that we have, we are trying to now change that to more of a dollar deposits from rupee deposits. So I just wanted to get a sense of where we are in that sense, on what percentage would now of your allocation is now dollar deposits versus INR.
Yeah, sure. So Sunil, we're sort of well on our way with that plan. So at the end of the quarter, we are about a third of our restricted cash is in dollars. Having said that, the mark to market for this quarter would have been higher because it happened during the quarter, so we were still subject to fluctuations during the quarter. But that number, where sort of 1 rupee would have been roughly equivalent, 1 rupee depreciation of the dollar would have been roughly equivalent to about 85 crores, will probably reduce to about 60 crores based on that, and we'll continue to reduce that. So our plan is to actually convert the majority of this by in another three quarters into dollar deposits.
So majority, you mean like 70 to 80%, is it?
It's 80 plus, maybe as far as 100, but we have to get there first.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks a lot for answering the questions.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anshuman Deep from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I wanted to understand the significant increase in restricted cash and vice versa decrease in the free cash. If you could just get a bridge of that, that's one. And second is because of some of our competition not doing so great, are we still in a position where we see there can be some gain in some slots in key airports like Mumbai or Delhi? Is there something like that in the offing? These are the two questions.
Sure. So I'll start with the question on free cash, and maybe Wolfgang can take the one on slots. So on our total cash balance for the quarter compared to the prior quarter was roughly flat. There was a reduction in free cash and an increase in restricted cash. Clearly, we did have a loss for the quarter, so that does consume some cash. We also took delivery of new planes, which also does generate some cash with the sale leaseback, but we then also put some of that into restricted cash as security for the standby letters of credit. So what happens when you take delivery of new planes, you have to set up these letters of credit, and so that's why that consumes cash. So that those are sort of broadly the key reasons why you saw that restricted cash, free cash went down a little bit, and restricted cash went up, but total cash stayed roughly the same.
Yeah, on the slots and parking base, I mean, we have demonstrated in the last quarter that we could place 20 additional aircraft with parking base and slots. And looking forward, for the winter schedule is mostly secured. I mean, there is one or the other discussion going on with airports and AI on that matter, but mostly we find homes for this aircraft. And there are actually some positive developments in India, especially the southern airports are very active, creating new parking base, hopefully also creating new slots. then some other airports are really upcoming because of the growth is going more into tier 2, tier 3 cities where there is capacity available. And overall, in the key constrained airports, naturally, if other airlines start withdrawing, we will be there because we get something like 6 aircraft a month. And with that, we will always be very flexible to, let's say, have the parking base, occupy the parking base, which might be not used by others. So in that sense, we are well prepared to take advantage of, let's say, a growing market and also a constrained market because we have the capacity available.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dheeresh Pathak from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So, Rohit, just to understand better, restricted cash would include supplementary rentals and also forward sales, right?
It includes the cash we post to secure the supplementary rental obligations. There is no restricted cash related to forward sales. There is one additional item that I didn't mention when I answered the prior question in terms of what consumed cash, which was the purchase of ATRs. We did buy 3 ATRs in the quarter with cash. So, but there is no forward sales and restricted cash.
So apart from supplementary rentals, what else is included in restricted cash?
The majority of restricted cash is supplementary rentals. There are some cash offsetting some letters of credit, etc., but it's mainly the majority of it is supplementary rental obligations.
Okay, and this is not available. Is it like a bucket you create and you call it restricted cash, or this is something which goes into an escrow sort of a thing and you can't use it even if you want to? When you say restricted cash, what do you mean by?
It's restricted because there's a lien on it against the standby letter of credit that that the bank would issue. So it is restricted because there's a lien on it. Now we always have flexibility there's always a price versus the percentage of collateralization you have that you can negotiate and change sort of and free up cash if you want, if you require it. Based on certain factors, but no, what we classify as restricted is what there's a lien on.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kaustubh Bubna from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, by when do you think this pressurized pricing environment will eventually come to an end? Because I wanted to pose a question. I mean, crude is between $70 and $80, and if we have no plans of majorly increasing pricing for the next couple of months at least, are we basically saying that as an airline, as a company, we're okay with being in losses for the next few months, quarters? Because that's the impression I'm getting.
So this is Greg Taylor. So in the short term, we're moving from what is the seasonally weakest quarter into a stronger seasonal period. So that will give us some upward pressure on fares during the next couple of quarters, which will help. You know, that being said, I'm going to go back to what I said before, which is that our focus really continues to be more on the long term. And we continue to believe we're on the right strategy to build a long-term, viable, positive network for the company. And so that's our focus. So I guess we get some help in the short term, and in the long term, we're on the right path. And with demand growing at 20% a year, the demand's going to grow into supply fairly soon.
Yeah, but, I mean, why exactly is this I've still not been able to understand. I understand that there's a lot of capacity coming in, and every airline says there's lots of competitive pressure. But I mean, cumulatively, as an industry, you've seen great amounts of like losses because of the pressurized pricing environment. So I mean, who takes the first step? Maybe not now. Maybe 6 to 12 months later, maybe 2 years, 3 years, 4 years later, who takes the first step to increasing prices? Because I mean, if crude comes down, well and good, but let's assume crude stays at these levels, just, you know, a hypothetical scenario.
So, you know, we look at this and say that it's not a sustainable situation right now. And so capacity adjustments are going to have to take place and prices are going to have to go up. And we think that'll play out over some time while demand continues to grow. And in the short term for Indigo, we're looking at our situation and saying we're in a stronger position than anybody else. We think our you know, capacity plan for the next year is logical, and we have flexibility if we need to change it. And so we're sticking with a strategy that we think is the right long-term strategy for the company.
But who would do my first question? Who actually makes the first decision to raise prices? I'm not understanding. Who would take this? Who in the industry? Because you guys are market share leaders by quite a bit. So who takes the first decision?
Well, it's Willie Bolter here. I mean, I like to look at actual facts. And I think at the end of May it was that we put in a fuel surcharge and so made the first move, as it were, to increase the prices. But it was not matched by the competition. You know, everyone can have their own reasons for doing that. But as a result, we had to withdraw that surcharge. And as I think Mr. Bhatia said earlier, you know, we are not the people that are interested in having low prices. We are doing our best to lead the yields up.
Okay, and on your international expansion side, any more updates as a company, as in how are we going to scale up this international business of ours? I mean, first we had, you know, in terms of inorganic opportunities, in terms of organically expanding, what's our plan?
So I mentioned earlier that we continue to expand very quickly into the international using, you know, sort of all of the capabilities of the fleet we have today. I mean, we added one international destination during the quarter, Dhaka, and we've since announced and opened for sale 6 more international destinations, Abu Dhabi, Hong Kong, Kuala Lumpur, Kuwait, Mali, and Phuket. And, you know, we continue to believe that these are just sort of natural opportunities for us. They're well within the capabilities of the airplanes we have. And as we've, you know, built up strong domestic networks out of large cities, we instantly get connections to 20 or 30 cities every time we add one of the international markets. So, you know, our plan is to continue to grow the international aggressively but opportunistically. And then the last thing I would add is that, again, we're taking delivery of a longer range A321s, which, you know, adds essentially another hour of flying, which brings another set of markets into economic viability. So anyway, we'll continue to grow the international at a pretty fast pace.
Okay, best of luck. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pulkit Singhal from Motilal Oswal AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. In an industry scenario where most airlines would actually think of scaling back capacity expansion, Indigo has decided to prepone the growth somewhat from 25% to 30%. So it clearly seems like a very conscious decision. I just wanted to clearly understand the reasons for the same. Opportunistic availability of slots comes to mind, but what about, can you talk about the availability of slots? Was that one of the decisions considered in the top 4 or 5 cities? And how much important is the international expansion bit in this decision?
Naturally, you look at the whole environment, market, but also, let's say, the infrastructure, which is very rare commodity in India, you look at that. And if there's lots available, it plays a role in the decision-making, but not at any cost. The underlying business case must be there. We have evaluated that. And slots were available in certain cities or parking base, and then we took advantage of that.
Right. So
it plays a certain role. There's no doubt about it. Huh?
And Pulkit, this is Rahul, if I may add, I think we've said this in previous calls. At IndiGo, what is fundamentally different is we are not building this airline from quarter to quarter.
Absolutely.
What are we doing for the long term?
Absolutely. There's limited availability of slots. I mean, it seems like a smart thing to do in that sense. Just to get a sense of slot availability, like in the top four or five cities, if you could give us some sense as to whether there's frozen, somewhat available, or freely available?
Yeah. So if you look at the top markets, and you always have to see slots and parking bays in conjunction, because a slot alone doesn't help you if you don't have a parking bay. So you need to see it both. And we see very positive developments in, let's say, in the southern cities, like Bangalore or Hyderabad. Then we see positive development in certain, what you would call, tier 2, tier 3 cities, which are still get now a size which makes it possible for us to build a certain network around it. New airports are coming up. So these are the plus points. Other, let's say, the most difficult airports are naturally Mumbai, where there's hardly any possibility, and also Delhi does not develop at that pace as we would like it. But we think in Delhi, and this is the most important market, Delhi, actually the if I can call it hardware, means the location of the runway, how are they set up, the space at the airport, there's much more potential, that everybody knows that. And we think that over 1 year, this will play out, that much more capacity will become available. The airport wants it. It's just necessary that everything gets coordinated in a way that it becomes available. So we can see, and we've seen it also in the past, that actually capacity pressure is there, demand is there, so it will develop further. So overall, a lot of work needs to be done, but we're also cautiously optimistic.
Got it. And just a follow-up to Rahul. I mean, obviously this scenario is going to, result in a lot of the domestic airlines being under tremendous stress, and even some of the smaller ones. While we already know you had intended to consider Air India, and that could be for multiple different reasons, but would you be also looking at any such domestic opportunities that may arise in the future, because some of them would have good slots available?
Yeah, I mean, like everything else, we'll look at it opportunistically, but right now we are so busy building our own business. But if something came along that was too good to say no to, we would certainly look at it.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prashant Kothari from BigTech. Please go ahead.
First question is around...
Prashant, may we request to raise the handset, please? You're not audible.
Sure. Hello. Yeah, the first question is around the capacity addition plans. In case you or the other players were to defer their capacity addition plans, are the penalties or escalation clauses just too high? That's not very easy to do that. And the second question was around these kind of weaker players in the industry. What would be more sensible for us? Would it be sensible for us to kind of let them die on their own, or would it be sensible for us to actually buy them out?
Yeah, so I think on the first question, I think every airline contract with their manufacturers have different sort of clauses. I think we're very comfortable with our relationships with manufacturers, and as Greg said, we can always sort of adjust capacity. We feel like we can create flexibility if we need to. We're very comfortable with our current plans. In terms of the capacity.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the second question, unfortunately.
Yeah. So what I said to the earlier question, Rahul Prashant, what I said to Pulkit earlier. I mean, there are two things going on at IndiGo. We are terribly busy building out what we have set out to build. But in that, and then you have what's going on in the industry today. If something came along that really was very attractive, we would look at it. But that's sort of whenever that would happen, and we'll have to measure it against is that more beneficial for us, or should we just focus on building our business organically? And that will depend at that, you know, whenever that moment arrives.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ruchit Mehta from SBI Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just a couple of questions. One, when you get a new aircraft that comes in today, and from a 6-12 month perspective, do you think it's cheaper or more economic to fly the aircraft, or would it be more value accretive for you to sort of do a dry lease or a wet lease over a short period of time? Somebody else, I mean, you've taken it, then try and put it out in the market over there.
Yeah, I mean, certainly for us, I can answer the question for us. Maybe different, you may get a different answer from others, but from us, we like to actually fly the planes we buy.
Okay. Second is that if you could give us some sense of why do certain markets also show weakness despite lack of landing slots itself or capacity constraints, like let's say Bombay-Delhi sector. And we've seen that typical yields there seem to be much lower than even what other sectors could be. So, and this is a sector that's fairly constrained in terms of landing slots, etc. So give some of your insight as to why that's the case.
Yeah, it's Willie here. I mean, the Delhi-Bombay sector is probably the most competitive sector that we operate on. And, you know, it's a, basically a function of capacity. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of capacity on that sector. There's competition. I mean, we've mentioned before the fundamental issue is that the fares within the 15-day, 7-day booking windows are extremely low, and it's not us that's putting those fares out. It's generally our smaller competitors get worried about their load factor towards departure and end up putting in discounts very late in the booking cycle. And so it's a combination of those things which leads to, you know, generally very low fares on heavily competed sectors.
But I'm just a little puzzled by this because, I mean, Bombay Delhi has been constrained for a long time for landing slots, particularly because of Bombay, and this is a business sector. And so I'm surprised that you said there is a lot of excess capacity in this sector itself. So it's just a bit puzzling itself.
Well, I think it partly depends on what time of day you fly. You know, most business people end up flying early in the morning or in the evening. But there's plenty of other time slots where, you know, there is capacity available, even though that is, as you mentioned, the slots are constrained.
Okay. Fair. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepika Mundra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for taking my questions. Just firstly, on the cost side, I just noticed that both your rental expense and overall CASK ex-fuel, if you look at it on a sequential basis, there's not been much increase despite the rupee depreciation. Could you highlight as to, you know, is there some relief on maintenance costs in the quarter? And as well as the rental cost, is there some relief because of NEOs coming in?
So firstly, if you just look at the costs on a year-over-year basis, you'll clearly see that it's really the explanation is really driven by the depreciation in the rupee. Over the quarter, yes, there was further depreciation in the rupee that affected your mark-to-market, but the incremental effect on dollar-denominated expenses in these line items won't cause that big a difference. That's why you won't see a big difference sequentially.
Understood. But do you expect a meaningful improvement in these costs with the NEOs coming in? I mean, I do understand the fuel burn being lower, but given the fact that you were doing short-term leases earlier on, is there going to be a meaningful dip even in your CASK ex-fuel?
So I think the primary sort of benefit of NEOs are from the fuel burn. 15% improvement on fuel is a huge benefit. new airplanes have a maintenance honeymoon and etc. But the total cost of ownership ultimately will play out over the life. So the primary benefit of the NEOs is the fuel burn.
Understood. And just on the yield side once again, just wanted to understand that broadly, if demand growth is at 20% plus, and let's say your competition is taking the pricing cut, and if you stay put in terms of the pricing, I mean, won't you eventually, let's say closer to the flying date, end up meeting load factor requirements, given that the demand is growing where it is at?
I think, whenever one talks about yield and load factor, I mean, obviously there are two bits of make up the RASK. And, you know, our focus is on optimizing the revenue per available seat kilometer. Sometimes that means we look for more demand, more load factor. Other times when we're confident of the demand, then obviously we're looking to try and increase the yields.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that would be the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ankur Goyal for closing comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you for joining the call. Sorry, because of lack of time, we could not take all the questions, but I hope you found this useful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members of the management. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of IndiGo, that concludes this conference call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.